We are continuing on today with our study in 1 Timothy. Last week, we talked about the really duties or the charge to Timothy as far as the conduct of his ministry, about how his what was important about the ministry and what was important about him, how he was to stay steadfast, how he was continue to devote himself to the Word of God and to the ministry unto God. And so now we're going to transition into treating specific individuals in a congregation. In that transition passage at the end of what we studied last week, we talked about we started into a little bit about older men and how to treat them, not rebuking them sharply, and to treat women as either mothers or sisters, depending on their ages, in all purity. And then we get down in 1 Timothy chapter 5, in verse 3, to a particular group, that was the widows in the congregation. So down in verse 3 of 1 Timothy chapter 5, honor widows who are widows indeed, but if any widow has children or grandchildren, they must first learn to practice piety in regard to their own family and to make some return to their parents, for this is acceptable in the sight of God. Now she who is a widow indeed and who has been left alone has fixed her hope on God and continues in entreaties and prayers night and day. But she who gives herself to want and pleasure is dead even while she lives. Prescribe these things as well, so that they may be above reproach. But if anyone does not provide for his own, and especially for those of his household, he is denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. So interesting principles here with regard to whom and how and when a congregation is to provide support, and whom and how and when families are to provide support. May I remind you, first of all, of one of the Ten Commandments, which is simply, honor your father and your mother. That does not stop when you move out of the house. Obey your father and mother ends when you become an adult. Honor your father and your mother never ends, no matter what kind of stinkers they were, no matter what kind of baggage there is that you're carrying around, no matter how they treated you, no matter how they're treating you now, no matter how you think they're going to treat you in the future, you are still to honor them, and part of that honor involves financial support from the children, even the grandchildren, unto the particularly widows who are in need of that particular kind of support. This raises some issues. I can't say that I have the answers to those issues, because in some ways I have struggled with some of those issues myself. The particular issue that I am speaking about is when you have someone who is a parent who is in financial distress, not because of circumstances, but because of mismanagement of their finances. That even now they are mismanaging their finances, say. Let us say, for example, you have someone, and I have known families who have dealt with this, with a parent who is an alcoholic or a substance abuser who is still engaging in that practice and is destitute. That raises some interesting issues as to what you are to do or not to do. Some people have come up with some creative ideas as far as paying the rent check directly, but not giving them money, because they know the money will go into all sorts of unsavory places. It becomes an issue even with regard to health issues when you have a parent who is living in very unhealthy ways, which is causing abundant impact on bills and life, and how in the world do you deal with that? And I wish I could give you an overhead with 14 different points, all supported by Scripture, in how you are to deal with that. Alas and alack, I don't have that. pray hard about that and understand that even in regard to how the congregations and churches was to support widows, note that you are to support widows who are already living in such a way to please God. And so that's kind of the principle that if you're dealing in your family in a situation where you've got parents or grandparents that are living in ways that are profoundly disobedient to God or squandering their money, then you have to be very creative. And God does not command you to just simply hand over every cent that you have to them to support their unhealthy habit or their unwise habit or even their sinful habit, but rather to use your discretion as far as obeying the command to honor your parents without, in so doing, supporting them in their sin. And that is a very hard thing to do. It's a very hard choice. Handle that with a great deal of prayer. If you need to, you know, knock heads together, we can sit down and try to figure something out or maybe come up with some ideas. But do not in any respect think that I have all the answers, because that is a very hard choice. Because in one sense you're dealing with that commandment to honor, and in another sense you are dealing with the principles of not to establish someone in their sin or not to be a facilitator for sin. So there's a lot of issues there involved. And like I said, even with regard to the congregation, the criteria here was not how needy someone was, but rather how godly someone was. And really that lays the groundwork that when someone comes for help to a particularly this congregation, I can't speak of, you know, other congregations or churches, but the principle seems to be that we do not have an obligation to support everyone who walks in the door. That everyone who comes to seek financial aid from us, especially those outside the congregation, I do get calls, and we had people wander in looking for support, that we are not under obligation from God to support every single person who walks in. Particularly notice that this is about widows. Why in the world is it about widows? Because in the culture of their day, women did not have the opportunities they have today. And so a woman had very few opportunities in order to make a living. There were some fields that were open, but in other ways that she had a lot of issues, so that the widows were totally destitute, whereas the men could find something that they could do in order to bring in money. So in that sense, it was directed toward those who were completely destitute. When you have an able-bodied man walk into the congregation seeking financial aid, my eyebrows raise way up, and it is unlikely that that person will get any long-term type of support. Usually in that kind of situation, and this should appeal to you also in terms of your family or your neighborhood or whatever, that when you have somebody able-bodied who comes to you for help, my approach, my philosophy has always been that if there is an immediate need, like I've had people call up saying, I've got a job that I've got to start in a week, and I don't have any money to put gas in the car, I don't have any money to buy, you know, the clothes that I need, the uniform that I need for the first day, you know, could you help me out? That's different. Then I will allocate a certain amount of money, which is, you know, relatively small, and say, okay, I will give you this amount of money for gas, and this amount of money for your uniform, and that is it. We are done. We are done. We're not going to continue to pay for this. Of course, we've had some creative individuals that have had a different story every week that I would think, but then again, I don't, you know, go around trying to, you know, get people to give me money for not working, but we've had people who have had, they've been supporting their family, same individual, they've been supporting their family, they're all alone, they have no family in the area, but they're living with their sister, but their mother just died, but they need money for medicine for their mother, they have no job, but they need money in order to get back and forth to work. So all this in the period of about, you know, 6 weeks or so, one after the other, it is amazing the kinds of things that you hear that nowadays. There is a Yiddish word, call it a schnorrer or a beggar, and you have lots of that going on. There are some very funny Jewish stories told about schnorrers and what sorts of things they got involved in Europe, and that has certainly come to America in a big way. So this is not about able-bodied people who come, but people who are genuinely in need particularly with regard to a congregation, someone who has lived a godly lifestyle and has no family to support. That's the second principle. Besides, if you're able-bodied, then you know you might get some immediate support, but that's about it. But if you have family, the goal is always to get the family involved wherever possible. If I can intercede and speak to the family, if I can try to work things out, that is always the first thing. Even if the family is in a total mess, a total disarray, a total train wreck, with you know cars off the track and things on fire and things about to blow up, there are very few families that will allow grandma to be thrown out of her house and live under a bridge. So there's usually a point in which the family will step in. Usually. Not always, but usually. Sometimes that point is beyond the comfort level of the person who is coming for help. But usually at some point the family will step in. And that's kind of the goal. If there is a family anywhere able to help out in any way, then the preference is that the family should be involved. There's also this idea here that the people that you are supporting, it's almost like in the early Messianic community, the other gathering of believers, it's almost like there is an official league of widows that had some sort of made some sort of commitment unto God. This gradually, I think, evolved in strange ways into the idea of nuns in Catholicism, but I think earlier on that was not the idea. The idea was you had widows that had a certain sort of ministry that you would support them in continuing on with their ministry if they had no other way of supporting themselves. No way of supporting themselves. Okay, down in verse 6 and 7, it talks about you have to be very careful that you're supporting someone who's not going to go turn into a party girl now that her husband's dead. Right, and that's what this whole deal is about, that you're supporting widows in good character. It's sort of the same problem that I alluded to as far as the family. You don't want to support someone in their sinful habit. You don't want to support these widows who are going to now go out and party hardy. That's not what you want to do. That's what you want to do. Because that is a bad thing, whether you are a widow or not, an unmarried woman. That is against God's commands. And it talks about you being dead even while you live. That sort of activity eventually winds up killing your spirit. Now, I remember that old, you know, the Three Dog Night song, that ain't the way to have fun, son. You know, that's the thing that it'll kill you. It'll turn you hard and it'll turn you away from the Lord. It's just not where you want to be. In verse 8, it talks about how if you don't provide for your own, especially for a household, you've denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. That's turning it around. That's talking to the families. And you have that that obligation that you shouldn't go off tilting at holy windmills, living your family and your extended family to fend for themselves. That's not the way it works. You are supposed to provide for your own. You're not supposed to go up on the mountaintop and you know, dress in white garments and pray and wait for the return of the Lord while your wife and your kids are suffering. That's not the way it works. Notice it's his own. It is that the man's responsibility to make sure that his household is well provided for. I shudder a little bit when I see instances of men who decide to go off and do some sort of ministry or whatever, and the wife is off at work providing for the house. I mean, it's something that they decide together that, you know, the wife has her career, and, but for the man to decide that he is going to live off of her, it's kind of chancy. Maybe for a short period of time, like if he wants to stop work and go to school for, you know, 4 or 6 years. But that's different than saying that I'm tired of working, honey, you support us for a while. No. No. What this is saying is even unbelievers take care of their families. I mean, my family, there are very few believers, but yet the family is well taken care of. And so why is it that unbelievers know how to do this and believers don't? That's what it's saying. That's one of the characteristics that we have to be careful and we have to watch for in our own lives. That's part of what God desires for us. Take care of our families. Verse 9. A widow is to be put on the list only if she is not less than 60 years old, having been the wife of one man, having a reputation for good works, and if she has brought up children, if she has shown hospitality to strangers, if she has washed the saints' feet, if she has assisted those in distress, and if she has devoted herself to every good work. Wow. It's hard to get on this list. It's really hard. 60 years old in those days, that was old. I mean, in those days, I think the life expectancy was probably something like in the 40s or 50s. So if you got to be 60, you're old. You're old. So this was, nowadays, 60 is not all that old, but in those days, 60 was old. So the idea here was not to kind of throw up your hands and let the church support you for the rest of your life, but rather this was a ministry at the end of your life, looking back on a successful life up to that point, a life that is built upon God. You know, reputation for good works, the idea there is not just things that are nice or not bad, but the Greek word has the idea of a beautiful or an outstanding, that sort of work, sort of like Dorcas in Acts, where this particular person was brought up to the apostles as somebody who's known for being a shining light in the community, someone who was serving others, someone whom other people looked for, who brought people to God. Brought up children. Notice it doesn't say bore children, but rather brought up children. Someone who had an impact in the lives of children, who transformed the lives of children, who really had maybe raised somebody else's children or had an impact in the neighborhood. Somebody who brought up children. Hospitality and washing the saints' feet, in other words, doing service to them, assisted those in distress, reached out, devoted herself to every good work. Someone who really has that holy reputation and holy attitude. These are the kinds of people they're looking for this list. Verse 11, but refuse to put younger widows on the list. When they feel sensual desires in disregard of Messiah, they want to get married, thus incurring condemnation because they have set aside their previous pledge. That makes me think that this was some sort of a formal order, some sort of an oath they took. Right? Because there is nothing wrong about getting married. As a matter of fact, in a little while, in a verse or two, Paul is going to command those women to seek to be married, seek to be remarried if they could. But rather what was important here is that they made some sort of commitment or promise to God to stay celibate, and then they decided they were going to get married. So it was the breaking of the oath that was the problem, not the getting married. Verse 13, at the same time, they also learn to be idle as they go around from house to house, and not merely idle, but also gossips and busybodies, talking about things not proper to mention. You know, I don't know, I've seen men who do the same thing at work, but in this particular case, when you have someone who's being supported and doesn't have anything particular to do, this is particularly with regard to the young widows, but male or female, if you don't have anything particular to do, the temptation is to go gossip. To speak about things that are not proper. You know, you get. I think in this case, women may be a little more guilty than men, but we still when men and women get together and talk, you can really slice and dice people. So you can have a parade of coworker around the table. And this is saying, don't do that. Especially the idleness. Idleness is a problem. Too much idleness can lead to filling your time with things that are not good, they're not holy. You fill your time with things that are not pleasing to God. Verse 14, therefore, I want younger widows to get married, bear children, keep house, and give the enemy no occasion for reproach, for some have already turned aside to follow Satan. If any woman who is a believer has dependent widows, she must assist them, and the church must not be burdened, so that it may assist those who are widows indeed. The tradition of taking care of widows and orphans goes back into the Old Covenant. I mean, it's something that God has always desired. We would help those who are not able to help themselves. God has also desired that those who can help themselves do. Those that can help others should do. Later on, I think it was in Thessalonians, back in Thessalonians, where it said, if a man should not work, neither should he eat. And God has this principle that says that you need to, work if you can, if you're able to. But when you look back at this particular person that they're putting on the list, they had two strikes against them. They were women, and they were elderly women, and in that culture, in that time, with the lack of good medical care, most likely an older woman is not in the best of health. So that was two strikes against being able to prepare to take care of themselves. I would preface that to say that when I said that men able to work should not be supported, there are, of course, those men who are not able to work, those men who are disabled enough that they're not able to work, and that's different. That's quite different. But rather, this is talking about those who are not able to work. So the principles here, first of all, take away with is, I can look at it from the standpoint of the congregation. That's what's in the back of my mind when somebody calls for help, financial assistance. And I do get those calls from time to time. Those are the sorts of things that run through my mind. Is there family? Are you able to work? Is this a short-term problem? Is this a long-term problem? Those kinds of issues go through my mind. Is there any family that can help? I don't care if you don't get along with them. I don't care if you haven't spoken to them in 10 years. Here's the phone. Give them a call. Right? That this is the time to swallow your pride. If you're coming to the congregation because you have no other way of dealing with providing for your needs, that's one thing. If you're coming to the congregation because the other ways of providing your needs are uncomfortable, that's unfortunate. But you need to call it to the people. You need to bury the hatchet to deal with those issues anyway. Maybe this is God's way of forcing you to deal with these issues that have been buried for however many years. So from the congregation standpoint, that's one way of looking at this passage. But since not many of you are involved with that, from the other way of looking at this is if we have dependent family members, especially parents and grandparents, it's nobody else's responsibility but ours. Now, of course, in our day, we have all these government programs and everything else that if those things are available and if they're not going to ruin people, there is nothing wrong with taking advantage of that. I mean, we are seeking those things out with regard to family members, so long as it's not some sort of strange program that causes them hurt. That's sort of the back of your mind. How can I help them out in a way that's best for them? So that from our perspective, if you have dependent family, then you need to take care of them. You don't foist them off on the congregation, but rather you try to deal with them as best you can. And so it means that you can't buy the big screen TV you wanted, or you have to, stop the cable service, or, maybe you don't need that third car. There are things that we say that we need, but instead of supporting people who are genuinely in need. And as far as the issue where you've got somebody in your family that is not in genuine need, but is in need because they are being unwise with the rest of their finances, pray hard, seek God's wisdom, do your very best with them, and if we need to put our heads together, we will, because it's a difficult issue. It's a difficult issue. Like I said, I've struggled with that in the past, had to deal with that, and it's like, why should someone who's lived their lives foolishly now expect to gain support and drain the finances of someone who's lived their lives wisely, and so that's something that you got to trade with. But it's something that you got to really deal with. Something you got to deal with. Let's pray. Dearest God and Father, thank you for all the opportunities you've given us in our lives to help those who are truly in need. I ask that you'd give us wisdom when people come to us for help, that we would understand what your will is for them, that we would be able to deal with them wisely, that we would be able to help them in ways that you desire for them to be helped, in ways that really maintain their honor and their dignity, that they might really be built up spiritually as well as provided for physically, that we might honor you and obey you and really cause your name to be lifted up, in the name of our Messiah to be glorified. Amen.